This is The New School with your host, Christine Hong. Welcome to a new kind of school, where we talk about career paths you don't normally get to hear about in the classroom. Every episode, I talk to someone with an interesting life path and learn about how they got to where they are today. My guest today is Larissa Russell. Now, I love and support all the killer lady CEOs out there, but Larissa is especially amazing to talk to because she has such a cool attitude about entrepreneurship and life and staying sane when starting your own business. At 23, she co-founded a healthy vegan cookie company called Green Pea Cookies. But even though customers wanted the cookies, they couldn't get them on major grocery shelves because of really high food distributor costs. That's when she and her co-founder decided to shut down the cookie company and start Pod Foods, the only food distributor designed for startup emerging food brands. Now, this company, Pod Foods, is so cool. They're basically trying to modernize a food distribution system which hasn't changed since the 1940s. Her company has recently raised $3 million in seed funding, and she and her co-founder, Fiona Lee, were just named on Forbes 30 Under 30.
Okay, well, first of all, I haven't seen you since, like, we met, maybe.
Probably.
Like, the commercial audition in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I just think it's, like, so funny now we're both in L.A. working in tech.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, I've seen you on my newsfeed a lot. So I was, like, a creeper. I was like, ooh, Rissy's starting a business.
And, whoa.
Yeah, I was, like, felt like a creeper, but, like, now I can, like, talk to you. Because you remember, because I remember you got some people from acting class to, like, be in your, like, commercial.
Our explainer video.
Exactly. Yes. And I was like, she owns her own business? It's so badass. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. We got a whole bunch of people together, and we went into this grocery store, and I gave everybody a character, and they just took it to the next level.
So, like, have you always been interested in business? Or?
No way.
Oh, really?
I mean, what does that even mean? Everything's kind of a business if you want it to be. For us, for me in particular, I was always very entrepreneurial, and I wanted to do my own thing and create something, but it wasn't necessarily like, I need to start a business. It just evolved into that. And so we started with this cookie company, which, of course, that was a business, but in a lot of ways, it was just a creative outlet in the beginning. And then we learned so much about the food industry that it made sense to change companies and do what we're doing now.
Okay. Can you explain a little more about the cookie company? How did that start for you?
Yes. I was working at a startup in San Francisco. It was about a 30-person company in 2014. Right after I graduated from school. And I was a data analyst.
Okay, cool. So you studied in college?
No, I studied government and economics.
Okay.
I learned the data stuff on the job and just learning what it was like to work in a startup, in a company, what were the different functions and roles. Because when I graduated, I didn't know what I wanted to do anymore. I thought I had wanted to go be a diplomat and be in the government and all these things. Which is still interesting to me.
Yeah.
This is a different path. So
why did you not pursue that path at first? Or how did you end up as a data analyst?
Well, I didn't want to just start upon this 40-year career when I wasn't totally sure. And so a lot of the government organizations, at least to me, I perceived them as a huge, long path. And I didn't really want to take those first steps. First, I wanted to invest in learning more about what I liked and didn't like. So I started looking into small companies, and then most of the startups were in the Bay Area, so I moved out for my first job. And it was fun. I learned a lot, for sure. But I wasn't passionate about what the company was doing. And a friend of mine who worked in the company also wanted to start this cookie company. And he connected me with my current co-founder, Fiona, and the three of us started the cookie company together. I jumped on the opportunity because they needed an American. They're both from Singapore.
Were you really into the cookies, or did you want to work on a business, or you just really liked the co-founder?
Well, the cookies were divine. They were green pea cookies. It was based on this Singaporean recipe for Chinese New Year.
I still haven't tried, though. Do you have any left?
Yeah, they're really stale. They're in my mom's freezer.
Okay.
from about 4 years ago. But basically, yeah, they were made out of peas and they were crunchy and divine, but what I really liked about it was all the storytelling that we could do, because we had different flavors of our cookies and they all had different names and different peasonalities. So we just had a lot of pea puns, and then it turned out that I wrote blogs and children's books and an advice column from Grandma Pearl, the wise old Earl Grey green pea cookie.
Yeah, your cartoon peas.
So it was more of, I mean, I look back on it now and I'm thinking, what were we doing? Because it was a cookie company, not like an avenue for me to share my thoughts. But that's what I liked about it when we got started, and it was super fun.
So you like this cookie, that would be like fun to like make little cartoons and stories for it, and your friend said, hey, do you want to work with us on this business? And you're like, yes. Well, what do you do next?
What did we do next? I kept my job, first of all.
Smart.
And we just started making the cookies in my apartment by hand.
Nice.
In the Mission District of San Francisco. And we would grind up these roasted peas, which we ordered online because they had to be roasted in a specific way. And then we made a very simple recipe, 5 ingredients. And we hand-rolled them. And then we went out to Dolores Park and we walked around giving people cookies and asking them what they thought. And we had this little survey app. And we said, oh, here, give your feedback on this app. And then they would say, oh, it's too salty, it's too sugary, yeah, whatever. And then they would write their email address. And that's how we got our initial base of people, which we used to launch on Kickstarter.
Did they feel weird that strangers were just giving them free cookies, or just went along with it?
Yes, they felt weird. And they thought that our cookies had something in them, because we were in Dolores Park and they were little and green.
Oh, okay.
But we said, no, it's just happiness and peas. That was it. Yeah. So.
And they were free, too, so I'm sure they were suspicious.
Right. Yeah. We just say, oh, I'm starting a cookie company. I want to know if you'd like a free sample.
Yeah.
You know, the words still come out of my mouth like autopilot.
Yeah. Why did you believe in the cookies so much? Just because they were so different from what's usually in America?
It was definitely unusual. The peas were on the rise. They still kind of are in the industry, I guess. But they just tasted really good. And we made them vegan, and we wanted to create a positive message around better for you or simple products.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of
five ingredients. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of the messaging, at least we saw at the time, just felt very exclusive or something like that. We wanted it to be more inclusive and happy, and this is a fun product, and you don't have to be rigid in your lifestyle to enjoy something better for you.
So I guess the beginning kind of is straightforward. You're cooking from your kitchen, you're selling, you can set up little shops to sell them. So when did you decide you had to get to like the next level? When did you open the Kickstarter and stuff?
My co-founder Fiona flew in from Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
And she came and lived in my apartment until I kicked her out.
Which, that's a lot, working and living together. Oh my god.
No, we've gotten better at it since then. But yeah, she came and she lived with me, and we decided that we were going to do Kickstarter pretty much right away. And so All of the making cookies and going to the park was in preparation for the Kickstarter campaign.
Okay.
And then we went on Kickstarter, and then it kickstarted us, but not because we had, I mean, we did really well on Kickstarter from a marketing standpoint. Mm-hmm. We got all of these people really excited about our cookies.
Yeah.
But then we had to actually fulfill, and we had no idea what we were going to do, because we exceeded our goal, and we couldn't hand roll that many cookies.
Oh, because you have all these orders.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we had to go out and find a co-packer and somebody who would make the cookies for us, and then we'd essentially just buy and resell the cookies and pack them all. So we did that, and we ordered in all of this packaging to my parents' house back in Philadelphia, because it wasn't going to fit in my apartment.
Uh-huh.
And then,
how many cookies did you have to make?
Oh, something like 50,000. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Okay. It was a lot for us at the time.
For a San Francisco apartment. Yeah.
Right. So, and then that was in the U.S., and then they also did it in Singapore.
Yeah.
So
did Fiona have a day job during this time, too?
No, she had just graduated from school.
Okay.
And she went back and she did the Singapore Kickstarter fulfillment. My family all helped me, and my neighbors for about 4 days straight just packing Kickstarter orders because I was going to India for my friend's wedding and I needed to get it done in a certain period of time.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's so stressful. Okay.
Yeah. And so we just stayed up all night for many nights and we fulfilled the Kickstarter campaign. And turns out our packaging didn't work and all the cookies had gotten crushed in the mail. So essentially we just mailed crumbs to everybody who ordered from us on Kickstarter.
Did they complain?
Yeah, but then we learned about PR. And, you know, the importance of good service. And then it ended up that they just were dumping the crumbs on their ice cream and in their oatmeal and stuff because they thought it was so good.
Oh, yay. Okay, so they weren't mad. Okay.
No, they were mostly very supportive.
Okay.
And so...
Is that more forgiving community, you think?
Well, yes, because Kickstarter, you're just starting out ideas.
Yeah.
Usually people don't... They realize that you're not some giant corporation that's just trying to take advantage or something.
Yeah.
So we did that, and then afterwards, we decided we needed to shape up when it came to production. And so we went and we figured out our packaging so that the cookies wouldn't break. We found a place to produce our... own cookies in a commercial kitchen instead of having to work through a third party.
Do you just Google this stuff or how do you figure it out?
Googling, but mostly asking, meeting people who know and have been in the industry. How did you do this? Or
so you just
where do you
up.
Make your cookies? Things like that.
So you're meeting other cookie vendors?
Yes. Other cookie vendors or just food producers. And then you end up learning a lot based on what other people are doing. And then it may or may not make sense for you. Okay. We wanted to do a co-packer for a long time, but they have really high minimums. Like this lady with the 50,000, that was low for her production.
Oh, okay.
And so, but it wasn't going to make sense for us until we really ramped up.
Yeah, I can't quite visualize what a co-packer is. Like, does she have her own manufacturing food factory and she can make whatever you want based on what ingredients and recipe you give her?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay. And then she can package it however you want to?
Yes.
Okay. So you just send her a design. Gotcha. Okay.
Right. But then you have to make sure that everything's working well and... Yeah. The cookie business was hard. And the food... Like, being a food manufacturer in general is very hard.
Yeah, because it expires so quickly.
Yeah, it expires and you're slaving away late at night in the kitchen. We did that.
Yeah.
So many nights just up trying to fulfill orders or maximize our kitchen time because you're paying and...
Yeah.
And then you go to the farmer's market and somebody walks by and they try the cookie and then they're like chewing it in your face and say, oh, it's pretty good, you know. And you're behind the thing saying, you better like it.
Were you selling it at farmer's markets like every week?
Yeah, we did a lot of that.
Okay. Where else did you sell?
We sold to tech companies in bulk.
Oh, that's so smart for their free snacks.
Yes, yeah.
That's really smart, actually. Yeah.
And then after that, we wanted to get into retail because on our online store, everybody was saying, where can I buy these without having to pay for shipping? I want to get them at this store, this store. So we went out and we tried to hustle our cookies into the stores.
Yeah.
And we were met with a lot of pushback. And then even when we went into the stores, it was a pain driving around the city for like $20 at a time, trying to follow up on orders and keep the product on the shelf. Because
you would just walk up to stores and be like, hey, can you buy my sell my cookie and try to convince them?
Yeah.
What was that process like? Yeah.
So we would walk in the store and say, buy my cookies. And then sometimes they would say yes. And or eventually they would say yes, and then they would be buying it directly from us because we didn't have a distributor.
Yeah, but so are these like local stores or like chain stores?
Local to start.
Okay.
Chains typically would want to work with a distributor, but it varies because distributors, the middlemen that buy and sell the product, they can't work with a lot of the brands that consumers are out there looking for. So chain stores will work with you directly, but it's a longer process. So when we were first starting, we would go just directly into the independents and say, can you order these directly from me? And then if you think about it, a grocery store has 10 to 50,000 individual SKUs, products in it.
Yeah.
And they can't be ordering that from 10 to 50,000 different individual brands.
Yeah, because I was also wondering, like, how could they trust you because you weren't a big name yet? So how do they know you would fulfill the orders, or, like, the cookies are safe, or are they FDA approved? I don't know the process for that.
Yeah, there's some paperwork sometimes about the insurance and things like that. You have to have insurance, you have to be producing in a commercial kitchen. But as for being able to produce, that's a risk that comes with working with smaller manufacturers. Mm-hmm. Your facility might just burn down, or yeah. Maybe you run out of money, or there are so many different things for these small businesses that are wild cards. But people will take the risk anyway, because that's where the trend is. That's what all the consumers want.
Okay.
Well, not all, but you know.
No, most. It's great that the consumers are, like, driving the business. So. Right. Yeah. Yeah. People get what they want. Yeah. Oh, capitalism. Okay, so you are trying to hit up these stores and get them to sell your cookies, and you said it was very frustrating.
Yes. Because the conversation would always pretty much go the same way, where they wanted us to work with a distributor because that consolidates their process. Mm-hmm. And then they can receive everything in one, order everything in one. And it would have been good for us because we could just sell the stuff. But then we started looking into distribution, and we weren't satisfied with any of the options that existed in the long term for us to grow the business. In particular, the national distribution system is pretty consolidated. Okay. So there are two players that are really running it for natural food. And we didn't want to work with them because it wasn't a very transparent process that we had heard of, and we felt that it just wasn't optimized for emerging brands or brands that want to grow fast or even sell locally. So we wanted to grow and be local, regional, and then national. Mm-hmm. And the path to get there was not appealing to us.
Okay.
So we decided that it was time to create a change because we weren't alone at all.
Yeah. I mean,
we learned about distribution from all of these other manufacturers who had gone before. And
what did you not like besides the lack of transparency?
Well, if you're not careful, the lack of transparency can really put you out of business as a small manufacturer, because you're met with a lot of unauthorized deductions or other deductions on your payments. And then there are also mandatory marketing fees and promotions and lots of things that as a small manufacturer you wouldn't understand going into it, so you don't necessarily know what to look out for.
Yeah, what percentage of your revenue did they end up taking at the end?
Oh, that's a hard question. I mean, they take a margin, a markup. Mm-hmm. So they'll buy your product, and then depending on where they're selling it, they could mark it up, you know, anywhere from 8 to 35% or so. But that is covering logistics costs. And then beyond that, you have a lot of other expenses, setup fees and promotions and things like that.
It's like, what are these fees even
right.
doing?
Yeah. And so they're more like fixed expenses that you can't necessarily get around, and you don't know how to accommodate those in your product price. And by the time you figure out how to do that, your product is so expensive on the shelf that mm-hmm. the consumer can't afford it.
No, this happens. I want to buy organic food items, and then I'm like, this is like $30 for bread. Like, I just don't want to buy it. Economics yeah. drives consumers, yeah.
Definitely.
So you were frustrated with the manufacturers, and you didn't want to go with the top two. So what did you think to do next?
The distributors, yeah. And it's not even just that we didn't want to go with them. They wouldn't have paid attention to us.
Really?
We were talking to one of them for their early stage brands program. So I guess, you know, we could, there was a path forward, but in general, the distributors prefer to work with brands that are a bit more established because they're taking a risk bringing on a brand when they're buying and selling that product. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why the business model is pretty much misaligned when it comes to incentives in the changing grocery landscape, because they are profiting from high volume only. And now the industry is moving towards lower volumes.
Really?
People want to have brands that are smaller, you know, emerging brands. Small to mid-sized brands are driving 78% of the growth in the industry.
Really? That's awesome.
Okay. Yeah. And so there's this huge shift because these brands tend to represent cleaner labels and better for you products or food tribes, whatever. And they're more nimble and responsive to the changes. But when it comes to distribution, they can't necessarily drive all of the profit that the distributors are looking for as one-off brands.
Yeah. What advantages... When did you decide to quit the cookie business and pivot? How did that transition happen?
Well, it's 2017, and my co-founder, Fiona, and I, we were trying to make a decision about whether to go forward and pursue distribution or not. And at the same time, we had met Unshackled Ventures. Mm-hmm. And we had been having a lot of conversations with them that we were learning a lot from. And ultimately, we decided that there was a much bigger opportunity to pursue in changing distribution. So I know it seems like a big change from a cookie company to a software business, but it wasn't all that bad because we knew exactly what we wanted to build. We went and we talked to all of these manufacturers. We made a documentary film internally, just interviews. We would wake up at 6 a.m. to call buyers for a few weeks because buyers are usually around in the mornings. And so we would call and say, oh, I'm a student at Berkeley. I'm just doing some research. Yeah. And trying to learn about their main challenges. And
why did you feel the need to hide?
Well, buyers are... It was just one of our strategies.
Okay.
Buyers are really busy, and so sometimes we would call and say, oh, I'm a cookie company. How do I get in your store? And we just tried different ways of asking.
Gotcha.
And then they would respond to the best of their ability about what they spent the most time on and what was challenging for them. And it became apparent to us that there was just no distributor for emerging brands. There was just no solution. So we thought, well, if we're going to replace distribution or create a distribution solution for this new category of emerging, then we need to have an end-to-end system. So that includes everything from discovery through to the actual receiving and the reorder, which means logistics. So initially when we started the company, we did all this research and we knew what we were going to do. And then we said, okay, let's do it. So we went and we put together a very quick version, just an online store of brands. And we talked to a whole bunch of manufacturers that we had known from our cookie days.
Right.
And said that we were collaborating with a few other vendors to try something new, and did they want to be involved? And they did. So they joined us, and we posted their products online with all of the different specifications that we thought a grocery buyer would be looking for.
Right.
And then we went and we took that initial catalog of brands to stores.
Okay.
And we said, oh, look at all these things you can buy from us. And then they did. And then after that, we just started to grow. And a lot of the processes that we were doing manually, because we hadn't built anything yet.
Yeah.
Everything that we were doing manually, we started to record and organize into these workflows that we later built into the software.
Gotcha. All this sounds really hard and just like so much work. When did you quit your job too, your day job? Because you had to balance that at the beginning.
Oh, I quit the day job pretty early on in the cookie company.
You were making enough money by then?
No. Oh. I just quit. And then I did SAT tutoring and acting stuff, and I supported myself in other ways. And so, yeah, that was really hard. I mean,
was it scary?
More just hard.
Okay.
I felt like I was going to always be okay.
Like you could get a job again later if you wanted
to. Yeah.
Okay.
But suffering is glorified. You know, you hear these stories and everyone says, oh, I lived in my garage.
It sucks. It sucks.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, your friends are out there pursuing awesome careers and living their lives and seeing each other and visiting places and you're not, but it's all a trade-off, because even though it was hard, I never really thought, oh, I'm not going to do this, and I would much rather be doing that other thing.
When did you decide it's time to talk to investors?
Well, we needed to survive, so there was that.
Yeah.
But somehow we had been making it work. But then we also need to invest in the actual business to grow. Mm-hmm. And so we were in this cycle where we could just maintain what we were doing, but if we wanted to get it to the next level, whether that meant it entering distribution or investing in online marketing or whatever, we were going to need to start to grow.
Okay.
And so we were raising money for that.
Cool. How do you raise money? How'd you figure it out?
Oh, no. Well, Unshackled was unique because at the time, they would read every single application that came through their cold form submission. And so we got in touch with them through their online form, and Fiona and I made a video introducing ourselves, which was funny. And so then we started talking to them, and then ultimately, later on, like about 6 months later, they invested in Pod Foods, not in the cookie company. Mm-hmm. And they helped us with some initial introductions. But fundraising is all about creating a strong network of people.
Yeah.
And at the same time, growing your actual business. So luckily, Fiona and I are a good duo. You can't just focus on fundraising, because then you're not actually growing anything.
Right.
So you really only want to fundraise when it's the last... I mean, you're always kind of fundraising, but you really want to focus on it when it's the last hurdle to actually growing. So I started to focus a lot more on the fundraising side while Fiona would be working with the team, building our product. And yeah, so in that way we balanced each other out for a long time. We still do.
Nice. Okay. So how did fundraising work on your end? Like, I know you, like, applied, and then what else is there in the process?
Yeah. With Unshackled, it was a bit different. We applied, we had some meetings, and we were just talking to each other for a long time. And then when we eventually had Pod Foods, they invested a small sum, and that's how we got started with them. Since then, they've been following on. But other investment... We raised some other money from angel investors early on. And it's just about meeting people, I guess. There's really no one way that it happened.
Yeah.
And if somebody invests, then maybe they're inclined to make another introduction or something like that.
Gotcha. How much money did you need for the pre-seed? Like, did you know exactly how much money you wanted to raise?
For the pre-seed... less so, because there's a lot of discovery. You need to figure out what you're building and then go build it and learn and test a lot of things. And so it's really about buying time at that point versus later on when you can get the money and then say, okay, I'm going to spend this amount of money and I know that this amount will come back. Like if you're spending on online ads or something, you know how to measure those results. But for a pre-seed, you just need time to figure it out.
Yeah. Was that a tricky time? I don't know, because it's like your first time doing it. Like, how did it feel? Yeah.
It felt like we were horses with blinders on. Because now you're asking me, and looking back on it, I agree with you. Like, what were we doing? How did this happen? But at the time, it just seemed there was only one logical step forward each time. And it was always just to keep going. And... it never really goes the way you want it to go, but it's going, so it's forward momentum. Mm-hmm. Always something new.
Okay.
And with the pre-seed, we closed some amount, and we learned about the whole legal process. And the money that we got was enough to hire a few key people.
Cool. Okay, so what were your first hires? Wait, also, when you say legal process, like, what did you mean by that, actually?
Well, actually, we priced the company for our pre-seed. So when you raise money, you could either just get a template offline, basically, and say, here, sign this document and then give me the money.
just like a contract template, okay.
Yeah, a safe or a convertible note or something.
Yeah.
We didn't do that. At that time, we actually priced the company with lawyers, and so that means that you are setting the value of the company at that point in time, and you're selling actual equity.
Yeah. Oh my God, how do you even find those lawyers that you can trust? That sounds so hard.
Yeah. We got through referrals from our investors.
Okay.
And then, so we learned about all of that process when the stakes were lower because it was just a pre-seed round. Mm. And then that was that. Our first hire was Chloe.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah, so Chloe came on to do something totally different than what she's doing now. And she was just helping bring on brands at the time.
Mm. Yeah, how many brands did you have at the time?
Maybe about 100.
Nice. That's a lot of relationships to maintain, yeah.
Yes. And Chloe was doing a lot of that, and then we would go out and sell the products into stores.
Mm-hmm. During this interview, I feel like you're just such a self-starter, and you've always, like, really hard things, and sounds very chill. But did you have any doubts on the way? You're like, what am I doing? I'm, like, 24. I've never done this before. Why should anyone take me seriously? Like, did you ever want to give up?
I never wanted to give up, but yes, it was definitely terrible sometimes, especially on the fundraising side. It's a nasty world out there. And, you know, it's hard for everybody, but definitely being in a first-time founder, when Fiona and I previously only had a cookie company, mm-hmm. now trying to take on the grocery supply chain.
Right.
And build a tech solution, right? And so we were met with a lot of doubt, which that happens to everybody because venture capital is always a risky endeavor. So I won't compare our experience to anyone else's, but it was definitely difficult. And you take it to heart. I mean, everything that you're doing is your life. It's not your job and your life. It's the whole thing. And so I look at it differently now. I view it as a very indulgent practice to be an entrepreneur because you learn so much about yourself and you have this huge opportunity to grow all the time mm-hmm. because a lot of times everything is really hard. And so fundraising was really hard and building the company with very little resources was hard also. But it was more about how it would affect the way we viewed ourselves. And then until we could really prove to ourselves that we were doing something that we believed in. And not only was it this vision that we had, but that we could actually execute on it. Until we could start to prove that, then it takes a lot to be able to stay grounded with not only the lack of external validation, but a lot of external degradation, almost.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know, people are coming at you saying, no, 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 this is never going to work all the time.
Yeah.
In so many words. Or, you're not good enough to do this. Or, love the idea, not sure about the founders. And I quote. Mm. Things like that, they can really get to you. So, yeah. You just need to learn to validate yourself.
This takes up so much of your time, so... I mean, obviously, it's like you're 24/7. Why did you like the pea cookies so much? Why do you care about food distribution so much? I'm curious.
The pea cookies, I don't know why I liked them so much. It just was energizing to me. And I have always, at least in my short adult life, tried to follow what excites me, even if I don't know why. Just what's intriguing, what's exciting. So that's what the cookies were for me. Pod Foods is also that way, but I can see more rationally why I really care about this, because the industry is going through this massive shift.
Yeah.
And it's at all parts of it. It's not just packaged food. That's just our little piece.
Yeah.
But there are so many tens or more brands, of thousands of brands out there creating products that consumers actually want. And consumer demand is in this direction of something that's better for the planet and better for health.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. Everybody wants something better.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then the system is set up for a totally different era of consumer preference. World War II era, like packaged convenience.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. And so that made sense then.
Yeah.
We just needed to ship spam everywhere. But now it doesn't make sense for the new era of consumer preferences. And we have the infrastructure needed to meet those preferences. It's just that we need to apply existing technologies to the industry.
Do you guys know from the beginning what you wanted to build and how to fix the problem, or what did it take iteration?
We knew that it was going to have to be an end-to-end distribution solution. So that means that the grocery store needed to be able to order online, or with us, however they wanted to order. They needed to order, and they needed to receive.
Okay.
So, and they needed to order from a variety of different brands. So when we started, we tested the idea of just making an online store with a catalog, which is very easy to do. Anybody can make an online store. And then when the grocery store would order a whole bunch of products, then we had to figure out what happened downstream so that they could receive everything in one. Okay. It's very complex because brands have a whole variety of production schedules, shelf life, how the product is stored, how it needs to be transported. I mean, there are all of these different nuances on the brand side, but then also on the store side. And so we started to figure all of these things out. And then as we grew, we built more and more of our product. So promotions and recommendations features and a lot that we can do with the information we're collecting about what's trending where and things like that.
Right. What were your other first hires, and how big is your team now?
Now our team is 20 people. And that's across all functions, really, but mostly sales, operations, and engineering.
Okay.
And before, we hired another salesperson because Chloe had moved into an operations role. So we hired actually two more salespeople pretty soon after that.
Okay. They're selling to the grocery store, or they're pitching to the grocery store, or to the food brands, or both?
We had one of each at the time.
Nice. Okay. How does it feel to be, how old are you again?
27.
27? How does it feel to be, like, managing all these people and have their, like, livelihoods in your hands almost?
Oh, no. Well, it feels great. There's just so much trust on our team and positive vibes.
Okay.
So, we bring on really great people, and then they manage themselves in a way. I mean, we're all kind of managing something in the company, driving that thing forward. So our company culture is the most important thing to us. And we work in a very specific, communicative and trusting way, lighthearted way, but that's also very intense.
Yeah.
So
are y'all based in San Francisco right now?
No, Chicago? We've got Chicago, San Francisco, Vietnam, a couple people here in LA, and
oh, so like 20 people over 5 cities or something?
Something like that.
What's your like favorite interview question now?
I don't have an answer for that, I guess. Often we will ask somebody to explain something that they understand really well. And you can learn a lot about someone by the way they explain something to you. Because we're two young female founders. We're two young female founders. And people need to be able to accept that when they're joining the company, that we are the founders of this company.
Was that an issue when you were raising money too?
I'm sure it was. I mean, we never. I'm sure that it was, but
yeah.
I tried not to read into what was going on because it would only harm me and the company.
Yeah.
In the end, for me to advance the company forward. It's not productive to become a victim or even to focus on it, even if it's true. The only way to even fight back or whatever is to go and succeed. And so you're not going to do that by focusing on how unfair it is.
Yeah. It's
your attitude. Oh. What do you see next for yourself?
Well, we're expanding now. So we just closed our seed round pretty recently in the spring.
Vermillion, right?
Yes.
Congrats.
Thanks. And so we can use that to actually invest in the company. For a long time, you're just hanging on in a way. What little incremental thing can we do?
Right.
But now we know how to spend the money in a way that can grow the business. Mm-hmm. So we expanded the team, and we're growing out of Chicago and the Bay Area, and then this year we're also going to launch in a couple of new regions.
Cool. Why Chicago next?
So there's a huge opportunity in Chicago because people are out there wanting the same better-for-you, clean label, farmer's market, local or regional growing brands. But the access is even less than it is on the coast.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Because if you're in San Francisco or LA, people will pay the premiums for those products in stores.
Right. People are willing to spend more in California for a healthier product.
Right. And it's not necessarily the same in the middle of the country. But that doesn't mean they don't want it.
Right.
So the competitive landscape is a bit different for us there. Huge opportunity.
Yeah.
Also, logistically was part of the decision because Chicago is a hub for logistics for the whole United States.
So it is? Okay.
Yeah, so it's a good place for us to have a central location.
Cool. Do you have, like, a biggest mistake you think you've made in the past 5 years?
Yeah. No mistake. I mean, so many mistakes, but it always leads to something, so.
If you learn from it, it's good, yeah.
Right, and usually the mistake or things that I could have lived without or come back to not trusting your instinct or your gut or your intuition, whatever.
Yeah. What do you think is the smartest thing you've done for your career?
Just going with it, you know? I think the smartest thing or the best thing that I've done for myself is not wasting any time. Just deciding, okay, well, I want to live my life and it's going to be wild and great. And we'll see what happens. And so I'm lucky that I've been able to just go start pursuing it from the beginning.
Do you have any advice for someone who wants to start their own, like, food business to improve the food industry?
Whoa. Yes, I would say first you need to figure out what the need is and your small piece or big piece, whatever. And have that vision of the future. And then come back to the now and look at your small piece. And is there a fit for this little seed that will then grow?
Okay, so advice for all businesses, basically.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people really want to do a business or start their own thing. But I think it's important to actually focus on the thing itself.
Like the problem you're solving.
Right. Mm-hmm. Instead of the beanbag chairs or like the lifestyle. The lifestyle is overrated, really. I mean, it can pay off. But you don't just want to be sitting around in a beanbag chair.
Yeah. Do you have an office right now? A physical office?
Yes. We have an office in Chicago, SF, and Hanoi.
Okay. Which one do you spend the most time in, SF?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
We have one beanbag chair. We got it as a joke.
Do you sit in it ever?
Yeah, sometimes.
Nice.
Makes me feel legit.
Yeah. CEO gets the beanbag chair. Not a private office, the beanbag chair. I'm giving you 30 seconds to promote yourself. Anything you want to promote.
Oh, sure. Well, if you have a food brand and you're looking out for better distribution, you should check out podfoods.co, podfoods.co, and you can sign up online and somebody will be in touch because then you can get better distribution in Chicago, Bay Area, and more regions to come. If you're a grocery store owner, I doubt you're listening to this podcast, but you're more than welcome to sign up online as well.
What about consumers? Anything they can do to support you guys?
Yeah. They should go buy all of the awesome brands in stores. And let us know if there's anything in particular that you wish to see in a certain store.
Can they leave feedback on your website?
No. Okay. That's a good idea.
All right, guys, that was my interview with the incredibly humble and down-to-earth Larissa Russell. I hope you learned a lot and you enjoyed the show. Please support us by subscribing to the show, rating us, and if you're feeling particularly generous, leave a review. If you have any comments or questions for me or any of my guests, please reach out on thenewschoolpodcast.com. Have a great day, guys. Try something new today.